Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are, and welcome to the Mental Manager podcast, where it is our job to create a collection of mental health tools for your very own personal mental health toolbox. And today I'm joined by two people. One of them is Martin, as usual. Good morning, Martin. How are you today?
Good morning, Silke. I am great. It's great to be back on the podcast with you, and also welcome back to work after your leave.
Thank you.
Yeah. How are you feeling now after you've been back a few weeks?
I'm feeling all right, actually. So it's been, and this is also something that we're going to talk about a little bit with our guest today. So it has been interesting. So as our regular listeners will know, I've been on maternity leave for 6 months, recently came back about 2 weeks ago to work. In one way, it feels like I've never been away. And everything's just very natural. And, you know, basically from the first hour onwards, I was being pulled into, you know, problem solving and was handed lists of things that were waiting for me, which, you know, of course is lovely. And then on the other side, it still feels like this massive catch-up exercise because our business is very fast moving and we've had a merger taking place whilst I was gone. So there's a lot of things that do actually feel like I'm kind of starting a new job. So I'm trying to juggle both these things and do them justice. And then, of course, you know, sometimes I don't exactly get as much sleep as I like. And those are the challenging days. And of course, you know, I do feel that there is a certain pressure, most likely that I put on myself rather than anyone else, that I do feel like I need to make sure that everyone doesn't notice that I've been gone, if that makes sense. So it's a mixed bag, I would say, but I'm getting there.
And, oh, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and today, you know, we are joined by Gabriella Parker. I love the way that you introduce yourself on LinkedIn, which is people operations by day and career coach by night. And Gabriella can likely tell us a little bit more about how that came about in a second, but it's very Batman and Catwoman. I like it.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on. Could you introduce yourself maybe a little bit to our listeners and talk about kind of what you've created with the Talent Foundry and your passion behind it?
Of course I can. I think passion is exactly the right word. And actually part of what I do is have a podcast called Passion Projects, because the business that I've set up was purely set up because of my passion for supporting people in their careers. And actually, when I first started, my passion for supporting people who were out of work because of COVID. So my backstory is that I started in recruitment a very long time ago when I first left university. So my first role was as a recruitment consultant, and I did that for 4 years, but worked in a pretty toxic environment, I'd say. I worked for a recruitment company that probably weren't the best morally and ethically. And I think we've all worked with these kind of recruiters or known these kind of recruiters that don't do the industry justice. But it was my first role out of university and I didn't know any better. So I didn't know that workplaces weren't meant to be like this, or I knew that I didn't like the way that they treated candidates, but I didn't know that that shouldn't be normal and wasn't normal. So after 4 years, left the recruitment industry because it just didn't work for me. And I'd gone from living my life in colour to living my life in black and white because of that environment. But I really didn't know what to do because all I'd ever done was recruitment. So I did quite a lot of soul searching and wondered what I was good at. And I knew what I was good at was helping people and talking to people. So I got into sales. And in sales, I progressed my career quite rapidly, moved down to London in a sales role, and ended up working with some amazing big consultancy practices that were doing projects for companies I worked with. So I did big projects with PwC really early in my career, helping build sales teams and being very eager, did my sales role plus working on that project, stayed in the office till like 1 a.m., getting all of this knowledge and soaking it up, and just progressed in sales roles. And then the pandemic hit and I'd gone from traveling around the UK Monday to Friday, leaving the house at 6 a.m. on a Monday, probably not getting home until dinner time on a Friday, living in a travel lodge or a Premier Inn, which isn't the most glamorous thing in the world, to, you know, being at home all of the time and getting to have dinner with my family during the week and taking the dog for an hour long walk in the morning by the river where I live in London, and getting that time for me that all of a sudden was making me flourish. And I thought, I don't want to go back to this when the world opens up again. And simultaneously, at the same time, a lot of my friends were being made redundant. And I had lots of calls from my friends saying, you used to be in recruitment, can you help me write my CV? Or I've got this interview, can you help me prep for it? And just, I was doing that in the evenings and the weekends. And then over dinner one night, my partner just looked at me and said, you love this. This is your passion. Just leave your job and set up. So I did. In the middle of the pandemic, I set up a business, which is probably, well, it could have been the most stupid thing I ever did. But luckily, I think it's the best thing I've ever done. And that business just organically changed. So I was very much a standard recruitment agency, if you will. But I decided to be very different in the way that I operated because of my experience in recruitment, but also in my experience of working at various different companies. So I became very candidate focused. A lot of the time that I was spending was on LinkedIn, which is how we've met, giving free hints and tips essentially to people who were out of work and looking for a job. So I started doing free CV reviews on a Monday for anybody who was worried that their CV was stopping them getting interviews, giving career coaching type sessions free of charge, but also just really giving advice every single day and doing videos of this is how you can make your CV better or this is how you can interview better. Then everything got flipped upside down because people started coming to me. So because of that advice that I was putting on LinkedIn, I started asking people if I'd rewrite their CVs for a charge or if I would start doing paid career coaching sessions with them. And then I also, on the flip side, had companies approaching me saying, I really love what you're talking about, but we've got no idea how we can make our business better. Will you come in and work on a project for employee engagement or to make our recruitment processes better so that we're not one of these companies that's ghosting candidates and making them feel terrible? So all of that really organically took off. And actually, a couple of months ago, I've ended up mothballing the recruitment side of the business because all of the other stuff has taken off so much that I don't have any time to do the recruitment bit anymore.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that introduction. It's certainly, like you said, it could have been the most stupid thing that you've ever done. Luckily, it's not. And it was certainly a very, very brave thing to be doing and very inspiring, I think. Thank you for sharing your background story with us. And also for all of our listeners, I can highly recommend following Gabriella on LinkedIn. She really does put out a lot of really good advice and just little bits and pieces that, you know, help inspire me on almost a daily basis. So yeah, so that's certainly something we can recommend. And I think you also have a YouTube channel where people can watch your videos, right?
Yes, I need to do more content on that. That's the next stage of my business is to start putting free webinars, I suppose, on there of training and coaching. So yeah, if people do want to follow me on there, it's linked on my LinkedIn and more content will be going on there very soon.
Perfect. Thank you. And you just mentioned ghosting and something that companies tend to do, ghosting candidates. And, you know, as I've written to you, I've been guilty of that practice before. And, you know, for obviously for no good reason, other than I was completely overwhelmed over trying to juggle everything. And then, you know, you've got a list of 100 candidates and you do want to do the right thing and you do want to get back to everyone. And then it just gets lost in everything else that's going on. And if your mental health, I think, is also as a hiring manager is not top notch, then that is something that is easily forgotten. Is not the right word. I don't think I ever forgot about it. It just was added to one of the little guilt balls that, you know, we tend to carry with us. I think certainly for me, reading your posts around this really brought this up again and made me think like, okay, I really never want to do this again. You're clearly very passionate about revolutionizing this whole corporate hiring process. So I guess my question would be, if you could speak to this and possibly share some tips for hiring managers who are in a similar situation like I've been in my past, and you know, how can we make this better?
It's a really good question. And I also love that you've acknowledged that it's something that you've done yourself, but I would say that you're absolutely not alone in that. In all of this, what I appreciate is that I don't think there's a single hiring manager out there who is maliciously not giving feedback to candidates. I do not think there's anybody, whether it's a hiring manager in a business or it's a recruitment consultant, who sits there and thinks, I'm just not going to give that candidate feedback. I don't want to. I don't think there's a single person that does that. I think you're exactly right. It's that everything else takes over, and gradually giving that feedback drops to the bottom of the pile or the bottom of somebody's to-do list, because somebody internally is shouting louder at something else that needs doing, or something urgent lands on your desk. And before you know it, it's been 4 weeks, and you look at it and think, oh, it's probably a little bit late now. And you feel a little bit embarrassed about it, so you don't do it. Yeah. Now, really then, the crux of the problem is understanding the importance of it. And I think it's just realigning that. And really where I've seen this make change and have a massive difference is, like you're talking about, that understanding of the consequences, I guess, on people and their mental health if they're not getting that feedback. So if I was to give advice to companies and hiring managers, it would be for there to be a bit of education on that when it comes to the whole recruitment process, but also employee engagement internally. Because every piece of communication that we have with people, unless it's intentional, can be taken the wrong way. It can upset people. People can feel like they're not getting what they need in terms of feedback. And that's in recruitment, and that's when you're working in a business. And I think there just needs to be this huge education piece of communication and what it is and how people are made to feel, intentionally or not, within every interaction that we have. The big thing with looking for a job is that, especially when you've been made redundant or lost your job, let's talk about COVID, for instance, because it's the biggest example we have of this. People are thrown into a new job, which is being unemployed and looking for a job, and they do not have a clue what to do. They might have worked in HR or sales or accounts and know exactly how to do that job, but we're now asking them to do very well a job which they've never done before. And you get no training on how to look for a job. You get no support from a manager on how to look for a job. And you're completely lost, not knowing whether what you're doing is right. Mm. Are the inputs that you're putting in on a daily basis the correct ones? Is your CV how it needs to look? Are you interviewing in the right way? Nobody ever tells you or shows you how to do that stuff. Mm. But it is a job in itself. And for me, people that are looking for a job have got to find their way and learn how to get better at looking for a job, because they're probably really good at what they do. It's just that doesn't come across in their CV, or they don't come across well interviewing because of their personality type, for instance, or because we've all been at home and we're all a bit stressed and it's a bit chaotic. And if hiring managers understand that, that then piece of feedback becomes so critical, because you're then the one person out there who can help them get better at looking for a job.
That makes a lot of sense. And obviously, I can only speak for myself, but I'm sure there's a lot of people out there like me. So I don't enjoy upsetting people. I don't enjoy giving negative feedback. And typically, if someone doesn't get the job, it's because, you know, it could be just because I don't feel they're not a good fit for the role. It may be actually something when I don't feel that they're a good fit for the culture, for the corporate culture. But of course, and I guess this for me is another mental roadblock to say, like, yes, I'm going to spend the morning giving feedback to people because I don't want to go around upsetting people. So how do I, in the most respectful and constructive way possible, provide negative feedback to job seekers?
It's really interesting that you talk about not wanting to give feedback. I did some training to a company this week, actually, on feedback. And a lot of what I was talking about was studies that have been done on the way that people take feedback that they're given. So I think it's 78% of people would actually like, in the working world or in their daily life, to get constructive criticism. Because people actually want to get better in what they're doing. They have this innate desire to want to improve. And if nobody tells them where they can improve, they can't do it. So actually, when you're talking to people, 78% of people, deep down, psychologically, want to get this feedback. What actually happens in our minds when feedback is delivered to us is it can trigger our stress response. So that's why people can get upset when you deliver feedback, is because they get that fight or flight type response in their mind. And I've certainly had this when feedback's delivered to me. My mind's going into overdrive about how terrible I am as a person because of this feedback that I'm getting. And I'm getting this stress response in my head, which then catastrophizes this and makes it even bigger in terms of how terrible I am. And I'm not just bad at this, I'm bad at everything. And then I probably don't listen to what's being said because my mind is just concentrating on how terrible I am. So knowing that, it's how you deliver that feedback. So in generally speaking, people need positive feedback along the way in order to be able to take in the negative. So I think feedback all the way through the hiring process is important, because you will, if you were at second interview, you will have had an interview before that and a CV application. So if you're wanting to deliver constructive feedback, I would say, as opposed to negative, at the end of the interview process to somebody, if they weren't successful, try to have dropped in some positives along the rest of the process. Mm-hmm. I think also the wording of negative feedback or constructive, the word I like the most is actionable, because if you can give somebody a piece of feedback that isn't about what they did wrong, but it's about what they can improve to get a better outcome next time, of course, somebody wants to know that, because their job and their goal is to secure themselves a permanent role. And if you can help them with a piece of information that's a solution of something that they can do, which will make them interview better or come across better or have a better CV, whatever that looks like, that's really useful information to them. So I think it's more about not saying what they did wrong, but about what they could do next time, so that if they were in front of you, you might have given them the role or you might have progressed them to the next stage. So actionable, I think, is the thing to take away from that in terms of feedback.
Yeah, definitely. Do you know, I've never thought about it in that way. And also, it's never occurred to me that it's probably a good idea to provide feedback at every step of the hiring process. So, you know, once you've received the CV and then after the initial interview and so forth. Okay, definitely something for me to think about.
Now, what I would say is that when you're very, very busy, loads of people will listen to this and think, that's great, but I don't have time to do it. So small things that I've embedded with businesses are taking, when you've got some quiet time, take 30 minutes to an hour out of your diary and sit down and put together some email templates that are emails that you literally add a little bit of wording to that can then go out to candidates all the way through the process. So how I've taught companies to do it is they've got these templates and then they will write on their, like their system, what the feedback is for that candidate. So you write it, I've then made these templates so you can just copy what they've written on the system, lift it into this email and press send. So that takes 1 second extra on top of the work that you're already doing, but that candidate gets the feedback that they need. So you're not replicating work, you're not needing to spend any more time. It's just that 30 minutes to an hour that you put aside when you've got slightly quieter day to set that up in the background to make that much easier.
I have a follow-up question for that. So there's really no doubt that we should think more of treating people better. And it makes so much sense around all the advice that you give around feedback. Could you speak a bit to the benefit to the company? Because sometimes companies need a business case or something similar of, okay, now we actually need to prioritize this.
Yeah, I've mentioned the word study again. You'll quickly work out that I love a study. I love understanding human behavior, but also business behavior and why we should do certain things. I think it was Virgin Media, when they had stores on High Street, had this massive problem where they realized that every time they did a massive recruitment drive to get new shop assistants within their stores, their revenue dropped drastically in all the stores where they'd done new recruitment. And they just couldn't work out why. And it was actually their chief financial officer who noticed this, because he saw the revenues diving and he was like, something is going on here. This is not acceptable. We're not hitting budget because of these stores. And he set a project to start looking into it. And what they realized was that the recruitment processes were so terrible in each of these stores that what happened was anybody who'd had a bad experience told their family, they then told their friends, and it became Chinese whispers in each of these towns or cities that Virgin Media were terrible. So nobody then went into the store to spend money. And you can find that research on the internet. It's a really, really interesting piece of work to have a look at. But Virgin Media were losing millions of pounds, and it was directly linked to their recruitment process.
Wow.
It's crazy, isn't it?
That is really crazy. Yeah. How interesting. I don't think that companies tend to link those two together, the revenue and the hiring process, although,
yeah,
well, maybe some pieces of it.
And I think it's really hard to, unless something very terrible like that happens and a chief financial officer spots that, I think it's very rare that you'd make that correlation in a business. But I think it's very interesting for other businesses to read, because I bet the same thing is happening. It's just the numbers aren't quite as large, so they don't notice it. But the same thing will be occurring all over the world.
Absolutely. I mean, I know we're coming to the end of our time, but if we could just flip the perspective to someone who's actually on the other side, so not on the hiring manager side, but someone looking for a new role, which is something that, as you said earlier, a lot of people are currently experiencing, and they are feeling anxious about the process, lost in the process, would your recommendations be for a job seeker to essentially steady themselves and protect their mental health and kind of take back control, I guess?
I think a lot of this is about prioritizing you over looking for a job. So I would treat looking for a job as a job. So work the same hours that you were doing before, so 9 to 5, if that's what you were doing. And I'd look at your diary, and what I'd actually do is block out time for you first before you look to put anything else in your diary. And I do this working for myself, for instance. So there's time blocked out when I walk my dog, because for me, that's the way that I clear my mind. There's time blocked out for me to go running, because I find that that's really great for me. And then I have certain boundaries, like I have certain things in the evening that I do and I just won't work then. And then what's left is the time that I can dedicate to work. And I think you should do the same as a job seeker. What I also know is that I'm at my best at different times of day. So even though we have this thing across the world that we work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, we're not robots. And as human beings, we all have better times of day and worse times of day. So I actually know that I'm at my best from 11 o'clock onwards in the morning. I'm not a morning person. I get up early, but it's not when my brain is functioning the best. So I know that anything important that I'm booking in myself doesn't go in the diary until after 11 a.m. because I want to show up and be my best. There'll be things like interviews that come into your diary that you're not going to turn them down. So, you know, they need to be at certain places. But the proactive work that you're doing, I'd put that in when you show up as your best. And then in the time when you know you don't show up as your best, put in more admin-related duties to do, so that when your brain isn't working quite as well, you can just do a task that doesn't require as much brain work. That gives you boundaries. It also gives you ways to keep filling up your emotional cup. So things throughout the day will drain your emotions, whereas if you keep feeding things back into that cup, like going for a walk or reading a book, whatever these things are that feed your soul, you don't drain your emotional cup because you keep filling it up all the time with these things that happen throughout the day. And I've seen that have a massive impact for job seekers in being able to protect their mental health.
That sounds really good, Gabrielle. I have one final question, and that's where would you advise companies to start? If they listen to this and you are in either a hiring manager or an HR, what would be a pragmatic approach to start incorporate this in your process?
I think it's, first of all, taking a step back and quite humbly and honestly looking at the process that you have and thinking, will this process positively or potentially negatively affect someone's mental health? And if it might negatively or you're not sure, I would look at how you can start to improve that. And it doesn't need to be a month's project that means completely tearing apart and starting again the recruitment process. These are all small things that you can add in over time. We're in a position where drastic changes need to be made in terms of the world of work in general, I think, to help protect people's mental health. But we are never going to be able to do it overnight. So any small piece that a company can do that makes a difference, you should be hugely applauded for it. So start and do it bit by bit. And I think anybody out there would be thankful and grateful for that.
I think everything what you have shared today really fits super well of what we try to achieve with this podcast around providing tools for people's own mental health toolbox. So I just really want to thank you for spending time with us here today. I think it has been it was very interesting to listen to your story, how you got into this, and the chance that you took, which very well was a big risk at that time, but it sounds like it has really paid off. And one of the things that we also discussed just before we started was that you would also help with a short blog post for our LinkedIn page, where people who have listened or maybe haven't listened, but they can read, they can definitely read about where they can find you and pick up some good advice. So again, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been very educational. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thank you so much also for myself. I've certainly learned a lot, so that I'm going to apply. Anyone from our listeners who'd like to get in touch with Gabriela, you'll find the details on our LinkedIn page or the show notes of this podcast. So
amazing. Thank you. Have a good day.